time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, my little Snake-A-Wish Foundation. You know, I was hanging around with my buddy the Hair Metal Hero discussing this week's movie that we did, Obsession. And he was bragging about how if he had one of those one-wish willows, he would be able to make a good wish. Well, little stinker that I am, I decided to take him up on this. I contacted a few of my sketchier connections and got myself a couple of the one-wish willows. I know if I just willy-nilly give one of these to Hair Metal Hero, he's gonna waste it on some magic infinite brisket cooler, or world peace, or some dumb shit like that. That's why I decided to be a little prankster. Yes, I'm going to make the first wish with my little one-wish willow. Here we go. I wish that the Hair Metal Hero uses his wish to hope that I love him more than anybody else in the world. But it only lasts a month. Then the fun will begin. Let's just say maybe you don't want to sit on his left side. And he's going to be my little food critic because, well, once again, cat might be on the menu. I'm just going to leave this on his desk and hope for the best. All right, we'll see you at the show. Oh, I'm a stinker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Horror Monster Tales of Terror. I am one of your hosts, Jason Jackney, but I am not alone on this trip. Across your listening dial, the Two True Freaks OG himself, Chris Honeywell.
What's the verdict, cat?
And we have Chris, the Hair Metal Hero, Tyler.
I wish Chris Honeywell loved me more than anyone in the fucking world.
And of course, I'm joined by my brother, Mr. Luke Giaconetti.
He's as healthy as a baby.
That's one of my favorite lines.
I had just a standard one. No more weird shit. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that's
what it could be the motto for this podcast. It could be the motto for this podcast. No more weird shit.
That's all weird shit on this podcast.
Oh, sorry. Please, no more weird shit. I forgot the please. Anyway, if you can't tell what we're talking about, then where the fuck have you been? Because there's no, I'm not kidding. Because as big as the Odyssey might get, and as much as everyone's looking around in their back rooms or something, fucking Obsession has been gangbusters. A movie that everyone kind of thought was going to be nothing has literally now made well over $400 million on a $750,000 budget. It is literally defining what it is to you think of like Halloween, Blair Witch Project, even Paranormal Activity, like these movies are made for nothing and made all this money and stuff. And I think it passed The Exorcist for sixth all time. I don't know if it's out the fifth all time for highest grossing horror movie ever, which is crazy because this movie, as we're obviously talking about Obsession, I don't remember a time when a movie was in the movie theater still streaming, like available to purchase for streaming, available to purchase on like physical media, and it was streaming on a service like on Peacock. All that is happening literally at one time for this movie. I don't remember. But I'm saying I don't remember any other movie ever being
model. Crazy. It's the ideal of what you would want with a movie. Cheap, high profit, And just like playing on everything and popular on everything. And yeah. what I love about this movie, besides just, you know, the actual movie itself, the idea of this movie doing so well, is it does it. Yes, it is sort of in the trend of a YouTuber, but these are YouTubers that are like filmmakers that put their stuff on YouTube and then get discovered more than like being like, because they've tried to get the like YouTube streamer people and have them do movies, and that's not done well. But the fact this movie doesn't really reinvent the wheel or anything, this movie is really good because of good writing, directing, and acting. You know, it just plays the form really well. And
it's been a long time since we've had a Monkey's Paw movie.
Yeah. And
yep.
If because hopefully the people even the who want a copy wasn't it go the monkey's like, paw. Oh, we need a good script. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, even the monkey wasn't the monkey's paw.
Well, the monkey wasn't the monkey's paw. Yeah. The couple of things about this, okay? So, Jay, you were talking about the level of success this is having on different outlets, right? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me also is that it is playing on all those different outlets, but it's playing to I think it's also part of it's playing to different audiences too. This is in many ways, right? We've all of us here, if I'm remembering our demographics correctly, we're all Generation Xers, okay?
Yep.
So I am born at the very, very end of Generation X. So I am what they call a baby Gen Xer, which is funny because most of my friends are geriatric millennials.
And okay? I'm on the other side. I'm on the other side of Gen X.
Yeah, you're a very old. Yes, you're a very old. You're a geriatric side. Gen X.
Yep.
Right. But the thing is with this. And so we got our Generation X horrors, right? And then we suffered through a lot of millennial-targeted horrors. Well, this is clearly a Generation Z horror movie, mm-hmm. right? And so it is very different in tone and attitude because of that, I think, right? And it plays really well to that audience. I think that audience understands a lot of the context of this film, and thus the horror aspects lean right into those contexts. The way that the friend group interacts, the way that they approach work, the way that they approach their social life, the way that they approach relationships, all of that is so much a Generation Z type of story that it's like I was watching this in preparation for the show, and I'm like, you know, it's no wonder that my 18-year-old daughter enjoyed this. And, yeah. Jay, I know, you told me about what's going on with your daughter. And I know other people that are maybe a little bit older than that. It's like it's really speaking to them. And it's I would much rather something like this be, you know, the Generation Z type of film that speaks to their actual, you know, concerns and mindsets and worries and fears than something like, and I'm sorry to tangent, something like Weapons, which... you know, plays off of certain visual aspects, but is dumb as a fucking stick. Whereas this leans into a standard story, but does it in a really clever and creative way.
Yeah.
So just real quick, I just want to throw this out there because we just talked about the idea that like much money. So I just going through, I was trying to see because I saw something the other day. Supposedly Amazon had said they sold 100,000 units of the 4K and Blu-ray. They know they merge them together. They had sold that within like 5 days or something. Like it was some crazy number, but I can't find it off the top of my head right here. But what I did find was this: on its seventh Monday, which is a couple weeks ago, so now it's been out almost 10 weeks, right? On its seventh Monday alone, it grossed $1.7 million. On a fucking legs. 7 Mondays, meaning not Friday date night, not Saturday, not even Sunday matinee, and not even necessarily your and Mondays and Tuesdays. I don't know about you guys, but up here Tuesdays are our cheap days. That's their $7.
Tuesdays are cheap days generally. Yeah.
Right. I'm saying is on a Monday when no one's going to the movies because everyone got it grossed almost $2 million. That's insane.
It's like the old days.
Right. So let's go real local for a minute. They go real local for a minute. Luke will understand this. So, you remember the movie Three Men and a Baby?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
So Three Men and a Baby at the local little tiny movie theater in Carmel, which is not the movie theater in Carmel anymore. It's the old one that's now gone. Three Men and a Baby played for months and months and months, and it kept holding it over and holding it over and holding it over, because at that time it was not coming out on the, like, coming out to rent was like, took a long time, right? Months and months and months and months. It was there, and it was like, and they only had like two theaters, so one theater was always showing Three Men and a Baby, and it just kept staying and staying and staying and staying. And I'm like, as a kid, I thought, that's pretty nuts. Movies usually last like 3 weeks and they go away. 2 weeks sometimes, right? But like, and big movies maybe lasted a month. But this was just staying and staying and staying and staying and staying. And it was like, this is what I'm talking about. And right now, like the other day, I went and saw Evil Dead Rise, right? Kind of thing. But we're not going to talk about that because that's not this podcast. But I went to see that. And what's playing that night? Because they only play Obsession now. It's only playing like two shows a night. And they already, if you went on, had already sold a whole slew of tickets for it on a fucking random Tuesday. Just whatever. I'm like, it just is. I mean, I've been there for openings of like Star Wars movies and stuff like that. And I get that, right? But like, we all know that after a couple of weeks, you can go see a Star Wars or whatever Marvel movie, and it's pretty dead empty, right? I mean, that's just what happens. They're still selling tickets. Now, granted, when I took Haley to see this, because she was begging me to see this movie, and my daughter to actually want to spend time with me and see a movie are two very fucking rare things nowadays. So I said yes. We went to the 11 a.m. show on a Sunday. And at that time, remember, that's why I always go to movies first thing on a Sunday. Everyone's either still at church or drunk. You get kind of not a lot of people. So Haley and I are in the theater, and then two kids her age were there, and they were kind of, they got scared by everything, and they ran out of the theater three times because they're just assholes. But I'm saying is, like, that we walked out, there was a line for the 1 o'clock show, right? They, because people were coming in, they're like, we're going to go see it. I don't remember experiencing anything like this in a very, very long time. So that's all. I mean, it's just crazy. And like you guys said, it does not reinvent the wheel. There's nothing here at its core story that is anything, you know, groundbreaking. I mean, would you guys agree? I mean, I could be off base here.
It's this, just the elements are really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got its own flavor. Like the filmmaker has his. I mean, it's borderline a comedy, except it's the subject matter is not funny, but it goes over that. You know, there's points where the absurdity of what, you know, of how this, you know, this guy. If it was a lighter topic, it would really lean into comedy. But still, like, there's just points where it's almost so over the top, and it's just sort of like a parody almost of, you know, the sad sack movies where something's going wrong for someone. But at the same time, this guy's sort of deserving it from, you know, second one of the movie.
Yep. But, you know,
go ahead.
Just real quick. Bear, right? Kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
His character type shows up across every spectrum of sitcom, movie. I mean, it's not like this is a new thing. And
It's how you view him, though. Like, his character, even in those movies, is kind of an asshole. He's the bad guy in this movie. Like, 100%. From the first second, I was like, I fucking hate this guy. He reminds me of, you know, people that I've known. But, like, his character is just so... And it's not like... But it's written to be sort of like, oh, this is the... He's the nice guy that's, you know, and been friend-zoned. And he's just kind of down on his luck and depressed. And his cat just died. And stuff, but when you think about it, it's like when you look at the clues, this cat kind of died of negligence, and he's just sort of an asshole. And a lot of times they do that in these movies, but you end up like sympathizing for the person as the movie goes on and you get to know him. In this one, every decision he makes you hate him more. Yeah. And more
up until the very end.
Yeah. Till the very last right. the second. Very end. From the very first second to the last second.
Right.
You so fucking that's what I'm hate this guy.
So this guy, this character type, we've seen it repeated, and they almost all look exactly the same too. Like the Shemp Howard haircut and the whatever kind of thing, right? You know, so like I mean, but this same guy, I mean, this is you know, you can on almost every sitcom's got one, a whole bunch of the like all the you know the rom com, every single one of these yep. things it yep. exists. But those all movies the characters are not right. But I'm saying, but this sort of this like, movie is not a this is a horror movie, and trying to show you like what happens when that guy does the stuff that the other ones wouldn't have the balls to do. Right? So, kind of thing, like, I mean, I wish I was kidding, but, like, it's and I get this, you know, kind of thing. Often, when you're watching the show, you're like, oh, this is the guy who's in this and that, you're like, fuck, okay. Like, you just stop feeling, I have, over the years, stopped feeling bad for that person in the mm-hmm. show. You're supposed to feel bad mm-hmm. for them, right? And I've stopped doing mm-hmm. it. I'm like, well, motherfucker, if you ain't learned shit by now, you know, like, yeah. like, the whole thing is like, you know, that's why here he literally does every fucking thing he does is self-centered and disgusting in
and
the
wimpy
fact that he,
and weak yeah. and
I mean he yeah, literally every- says he literally says what's so bad about being with me, you know she's begging you to fucking kill yes. her, you know yes, you yeah. you're torturing this woman, you know you're yes. raping her, you know this is happening, but you don't fucking care because you're a fucking piece of shit. And that's the yep. problem is that
yep,
and that's one of the things I was saying. We were talking off, you know, about other things before. I get frustrated sometimes with movies, right? And again, to me, so far, I have not seen. Obviously, I haven't seen The Odyssey. I didn't see Project Hail Mary. I didn't see a couple other things. This to me, for a while, I had this behind Primate as my best film of the year. This might be better than Primate. They're kind of close.
I think it is. Yeah.
I think I've watched this now. Twice and at like a third time we're with Kelly. Like I'm saying is, I think I'm starting to kind of like, okay, I really like Primate, don't get me wrong, but like this might be the movie I has more rewatchability to it overall, just and because of its scope. But I'm saying is, I want to strangle this motherfucker, like him and his fucking fat ass friend. Both of them yeah. need to get fucking lit. No, I mean, not that Nikki's yeah. a great person before she gets, controlled. Because Nikki's not a fucking nice person either. The only person who's got any redeeming value besides Andy Richter is Sarah.
Yeah, I was about to say Andy
Richter. Andy Richter. Dude, well, Andy Richter comes on and Haley goes, shit, it's Andy Richter. Haley never knows anybody. Haley knows who Andy Richter is. And only because she's probably seen him on like some TikTok clip or something like that. She goes, I like Andy Richter. He must have been on Modern Everybody Family does. Or something. Because she only knows him from like probably something. She wouldn't know him from
the Conan O'Brien show. Yeah.
Yeah. But she would know him from like Modern Family or from like yeah. just being appearances on sitcoms. Ugh. Anyway. Excuse sorry.
Me. Maybe that's why the Zoomers love this is because it finally calls out these characters as pieces of shit. Like his mm-hmm. his friend would be like is like usually kind of, you know, that character's kind of an asshole, but he's just sort of like nerdy and a little and he's got a little of the, you know, characters of the guy who played Booger used to play in him, you know, a little cruder but at the same time intelligent and stuff. But like you're watching him, you're just like, I just don't like most of these mm-hmm. people, and the two girls. I mean, they intentionally do it, and like so the dialogue at the beginning is very student film kind of dialogue, but it gets you get into the groove of it, and as I went on, I was like, okay, I think that was more done on purpose. Mm-hmm. Because they obviously are manipulating the hell out of you all the way through the movie, and I think this was the first where they sort of called out those characters, and also at the same time, you cannot underestimate the performance by the actress who plays Nikki in this mm-hmm. carries this whole film, because Bear's a good performance, but he's an asshole, and I just he's unpleasant on the screen, and but not in a way that makes you tune out of the movie. It's enough to there's a tension between, you know, just a million different things at all times through this movie, and she the actress who plays Nikki pulls it all together, and like I hope they bought her therapy after this movie, because the shifts in what, you know, acting that she's got to do from second to second, and at the same time they're all, you know, I mean like the subject, like I haven't really watched a lot of like YouTube reactions to it, because it's like they're going to have to baby talk and bleep words all the way through this, because the subject matter of this is like, you know, consent and, you know, that I mean, there's basically scenes in here where it's like when you know, you think about it for 2 seconds, you're like, he's raping her on screen, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very intense. And she's just diving in to the depths of each part of it, you know, whatever aspect of her character, because the director's gone out of his way to say she's not possessed. She's like, there's not another person possessing her or another entity or something, which makes me think she's just, her personality's been split, you know?
It's just totally subjugated.
Yeah. And but so, there's also a part of her that's still her, you know, screaming into.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, void. She has that one moment of clarity when he first kisses her.
Oh, Jesus! And yeah,
it's just like, oh.
And that and that acting. I mean, it's gonna be a shame that she's not gonna have an Oscar nomination for this movie. Which, you know, obviously, that's just not gonna happen. But it should, because, oh my God. Like, just riveting through the whole thing. And, you know, and the movie is very good at laying out and, you know, making sure you know from the beginning that, like, she knows what's going on and he knows what's going on. And she can't articulate it because she's being forced to by a spell. He can't, because he's just too much of a big fucking pathetic pussy to do anything that isn't just like the path of least resistance or the most self-serving thing, you know. He can't even fucking kill himself at the end, and it's just,
and then he does, and what does that leave? It's gonna leave her with a big mountain of shit.
Well,
she's the only person alive in that house.
He finally gets his chokes his pills down, but at the same time he's trying to puke them up, and the only reason he doesn't puke them up is she snaps the thing and probably wishes, you know, that he loves her the same as him, and that's why. And then when that happens, he forgets about the pills and croaks
I know I cut Luke off before. I don't want to, like, I want to give you Luke a chance. I just want to say this real quick, because you just mentioned it there. So two things there. One, the pills, he takes the pills, and the actor, what's his name, Michael Johnston, said, hey, what if I try and puke the pills up? And Curry Barker goes, oh my God, that'd be great. That's just his last final fuck you to her, because he doesn't want to kill himself. He's too much of a pussy, right? So that's what the whole point is. He's trying to make himself puke. That was his call in the scene. He goes, let me try this. They did it twice. And then obviously she clearly wishes him to love her as much as she loves him. And that's why he dies. Now, I just want to say this because, Indy Navarette, that's her name. She has gone on and said they did every scene at least 2 to 3 times. And she would play the scene completely infatuated with him, semi-infatuated, and not interested at all. Or disgusted by him. They would do the scene two or three different times. And then Curry Barker said, I then went and cut it together. And so he cut scenes together.
Great plan. Yeah.
It's like, and I'll be honest with you. She's been on, I don't know if you've seen any
of these. She was on Superman and Lois. That's how I know her from. She was Lana Lang's daughter.
Yeah.
On it.
So I'm saying she hasn't been around a ton. Like she's all these people are newer faces, but she was on, with either Kimmel or one of those things, and she's just talking. Like she's like, look, she goes, this is what we did. Like this, we didn't like. He goes, this is what he said to do. We did it. I did the best I could. If people like it, great. If they don't like it, okay. Like she's not like out there going, yes, I'm the most amazing person in the world. I'm the greatest actor. I'm like. And again, that might just be shtick that she's putting out there, but this is what that they're all saying the same things. Like they're
she
all
obviously
like, this is
takes
how
her acting seriously. Because,
and the thing
oh
is,
God.
They were make sure they were filming the other people too because they didn't know which take she was going to do. It didn't like okay, we're going to do the serious take for. So she would pick which take they did in what order, and the reactions they got, they would film them. So like a lot of times, like when she starts when she starts screaming and stuff like that, they didn't know the actors are reacting, and so the reactions are so real because they didn't know what was coming.
Yeah,
they didn't know if they were getting the lovey-dovey one or the psychopath one, and it's like I obviously you can't make every single movie like that, but if you're going to have a movie that has a cast of like 7 people, right, and you're going to make this for under $1 million, and all the things
if
they did.
If
they
you're
just
doing a movie of this concept, that's a great idea for it. It's super smart. Shit, I forgot where I was at.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw an interview with her, and at the end of the movie, they were going to have her take the gun and shoot herself.
Yep.
And she said, no, well, wouldn't it be better if I just,
Yeah, she goes, I should snap out of
stayed alive and
dies.
Was, like, crying. And, like, that's when they got the idea to whip the camera over to the TV and then just run the credits on the TV. And, that seems like something that you would have been in the script. It's, like, kind of perfect at the ending of it. And then the song comes on.
Bleak.
It's very well executed. And that is all just from, just sort of like a decision made while they were shooting it, to change the whole ending of it.
So think about this. And I'm not saying that Curry Barker is like Quentin Tarantino, but Quentin Tarantino has openly said he has exactly what he wants to shoot in mind. Right. But certain people like Samuel Jackson and, Kurt Russell, like people with enough gravitas can say, hey, let me try that scene again this way. And he's always like, yeah, let's try it. Like, because he's a film guy, right? And what that says is, because a lot of times, there's some directors who don't fucking care what you say. We're doing it my way, whatever. Like a William Friedkin, he's going to do it his fucking way. He don't give a shit what you want to do, right? But that's what I'm saying is, like, sometimes you have directors who are willing to listen to. Now, again, I understand that these people, Curry Barker has said that the people in this movie, he's done a lot with them, like a lot of stuff on YouTube, it's all the same actors and things like that. So these are his friends as well as being the actors in the movie. So he trusts them, like, let's try it. Okay. It's not like there's a huge setup. See, if this was like the scene in The Thing when Norris's chest burst open and it chomps off his arm, that scene took forever to set up. They had one shot at it. There is no redoing that, right? Here, what are you doing? Okay, undo the box, refold the box. Like, there's not like a lot of like setup for each shot because it's two people interacting. It's not supernatural or effects laden or whatever. Like, it's very much just their interactions and their talking, right? Instead of having crazy makeups and crazy whatever over the top kind of stuff. So it allows for some more of that, right? It allows for those things to happen. Again, very different mindset than some people might have. And it's also, too, what we not have here. We don't have a major studio but with some, bookkeeper counting the, what's everything happening here. These are guys making the film, understanding their budget, understanding that no one's getting paid. I mean, no one's getting paid on this movie.
All they've been doing is low-budget movies anyway, they have it down. And they're doing it on YouTube, so they're doing a lot of them. And they have it down. And it's good. Hopefully this is something that used to happen a lot with like more auteur filmmakers, but even either auteur filmmakers or filmmakers more on the Roger Corman end, where they would have a crew. They would have actors and a crew of people, of, you know, the cameramen and stuff like that. And they would have a pool that they could draw from, and they all work together and stuff. And that still happens, but it not as much. And it seems like with the stuff coming from YouTube, it encourages more of that, which also, you know, it just makes for better movies. And I'm very encouraged by the success of Obsession, because there's nothing to blame it on except for there's nothing for fucking studio executives to get wrong about what it is that makes the movie good. You know, it has nothing but the script and the acting and the cinematography and, you know, direction. That's all it has. There's no big gimmick to it. There's no weird way of telling the story. You know, there's little tidbits in it that are, you know, sort of different in, you know, some of the humor of it. The whole part of the gift shop, you know, the gift shop and the customer support number that you could call are like right out of a
Let me say this about the customer support number, okay? They answered, right? And the guy clearly was local. The guy was clearly local, right? It wasn't some call center halfway across the world. So you got to give the One Wish Willow people credit, because they're giving the customer their, now the service wasn't great, but it could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse.
Well, they set it up too, because somebody was talking about it in the background, and they're like, and yeah, even the, or no, it was like he
on
was
the
looking
Reddit.
At reviews
he goes on the
of
Reddit,
it,
which,
and it said,
okay,
even the
so
customer
first off,
service is in on the gag, it said.
Yeah.
So here's the first. Okay, we already established that Baron is an asshole, right? Okay, yep. And we really don't like him.
Yes.
He fucking goes to Reddit, so that should be your first clue that you can't trust any decision this guy's gonna make. When he has a problem, and he goes to Reddit. Okay. So that in and of itself, right? The other side of this, which I think is really crazy, is that it's pretty clear, as we've been discussing, that, you know, Bear's character flaws and his poor decision making and his lack of backbone and his lack of conviction and his lack of self-confidence and all these other internet terminology, all this other beta male shit that he's got going on, okay, is that Nikki, like you referred to, Jay, is not much better.
Yeah,
because all of the things that she does are the same crazy, psycho, manipulative girlfriend shit that we hear about, right? Mm-hmm. The way that she talks to him, the crying, the pouting, the babe, I think we should break up. You know, all that stuff is the same, you know, FDS shit that, you know, you got the red pill guys and the FDS girls. That's all this shit is, and it's like, you know, I am so glad I don't have to date right now, right? Because that's what's out there. That's what's fucking out there. This is real life, as my friend Keith used to say. This is real life, right here. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's like you said. There's Sarah is and Andy Richter the only characters that you can like. Ian in a different movie would be the guy that he's kind of a lech and he's kind of a womanizer, but he's charming and he's got a heart of gold. This guy's just another asshole. This guy's just another asshole.
He's just another jerk.
And you can look at when they go over to his house for the party, you can see that he's decorated it like an asshole, right? Like he wishes for $1 billion. Yeah. And he's like, dude, I got like $1 billion over here. I was happy to see him get shot. I'm sorry, I spoke over you, Harold. What did you say?
I said that would be my wish too.
$1 billion.
I would have been more specific. I would have wanted in, you know, hundreds and in fives, or, you know, non-negotiable bearer bonds or something.
Non-negotiable bearer bonds.
You know, the funny part is
I mean, the other part that I just want to mention quickly here is that, so talking about, you know, we've all have referred to the fact that this is a monkey's paw story. Okay, so what's funny is that apparently, for Barker, it's not just the monkey's paw, it's specifically the Simpsons version
Yes.
Of the Monkey's Paw story, which goes, but that speaks again to the ages involved here, right? If your introduction to the Monkey's Paw was not from Tales from the Crypt,
but from Treehouse
of Horror, exactly. All I want is a turkey sandwich. I don't want any monster turkeys. I don't want to become a turkey myself. I just want a turkey sandwich. If that's your introduction, right, then you're obviously going to come to a story where you tell a Monkey's Paw story from a different perspective because just of the context and the age in which you grew up.
I mean, I definitely can feel some Jordan Peele in this. I was a little disappointed because at the beginning they were just going for a Star Wars theme. They were going to the bar called Greedo's and they're talking about a teacher called Mr. Lando, and then they just sort of drop that. But
the bar they're at is Barker's. The bar they're drinking in is Barker's. Right. The bar they're going to after to do carry through bad karaoke is Greedo's.
Greedos, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's just this little in-jokes.
There's a little American Werewolf in London American Werewolf in London in this, too.
I mean, it's just like how all the cops in RoboCop, all of them are named after serial killers. Like, right. all the other cops who's not Lewis and Murphy are all named after serial killers. There's one named Manson. There's one named, like, it's like, what the fuck? It's like, no one, it's just a throwaway thing. But it's in there. Anyway, sorry. Not to talk RoboCop.
we can always talk RoboCop.
Oh, I love RoboCop. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, but there's a whole comedy skit aspect to this, too, that, like...
I threw this on a week ago on a Sunday morning, and I was like, I wasn't getting the black humor vibe from it. I was literally just totally engrossed by the fact that, like, this is just fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I was not laughing at anything in this.
I mean, it's dark, dark humor. There's laughs, you know, there's like the scene where they're in, where he goes back to the store where he bought the willow, and then they're fucking with him. And then they're like, well, you know, at the end, they're like, you can always call the number. And then he's like sort of freaking out. So like the sound is distorting and his vision is getting blurry. And you hear other guys going, or you could just kill yourself. You know, you could just, you know, maybe you just kill yourself, you know, which is hilarious.
But the thing is, it's just pitch black. The service thing says you can just kill yourself. Now this is I've seen this theory out there that the shop owner, who's the woman, and then he said, "Well, I got my wish," that she wished to be a man. I've heard that they're supposed to be the same person. I don't fucking know, nor do I care. The whole idea is he's
not enough context.
No, right. I understand that, but I'm saying is, but he said, "Well, I got my wish, and I'm happy," right? Kind of whatever, which. Who cares, right? But the whole thing is, he says you can kill yourself. I mean, the other one says, well, people complain about that. Like it's not that you haven't been warned, you know, but he doesn't fucking care.
Yeah.
So what's so bad about being with me? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
How about I fucking ground your nuts into a fine powder? Fucking ass.
Here's the other thing, right? One of the things she does, she cuts his hair while he's asleep.
Yeah.
And I fucking cheered. It's like, get a haircut, you fucking slob. I mean, Jesus Christ. You're in your 20s. You're dressing like you're 15, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Clean yourself up. You're out on a date. You're wearing the same ratty fucking sweater. You look like shit. It's like you've got this beautiful girl. Fucking shave, get a haircut, put on a shirt with a fucking collar. You piece of human shit. It just pissed me off.
No,
and that's what I knew I was getting an emotional response. When we watched Weapons or we watched Hereditary, I got pissed off for me. I got pissed off for myself. It's like, I got other shit I could be doing.
Right.
And no, I got to watch this because we do this show.
It's called feeling sorry for yourself.
And this, I'm getting mad. I'm getting mad at the character because it's like, come on. This is the type, again, of beta male shit that now girls are like, well, there's no good guys anymore. It's like, fucking put out some effort.
Bear thinks he's the good guy.
It's because we're not in the 666 club. six packs.
Well, maybe you aren't
six
hero,
six
but
tall.
You know the rest of us could be. You know, I'm
yeah,
done.
Like
I've met your brother, and I've seen pictures of you.
Yeah,
well, I got a six pack. It's underneath all of this.
I have a couple of six packs. I got a Guinness. I got a thing of Miller Lite. I got a couple of six packs going on here.
It's Miller time.
Yeah, exactly. Like
it's fucking Miller time, boss.
the six figures and the six packs and stuff. It's so much work, and like I've never had any problems getting girlfriends being poor and ugly. You know.
Yeah, but that's because you're from the Jurassic part of the Generation X.
No. Nowadays, it was funny because I saw somebody was sort of dressing down a guy like this bear guy, and they were like, "Look, man," and the guy was feeling sorry for himself, going, "Well, girls will never date me because I'm ugly." And they're like, "No, you don't get it. Ugly is in. You see some of the worst, like cave troll looking guys." With pretty girlfriends because they have a good personality.
You know what they call that? You know what they call that? They call that CBS sitcom. That's what they call that. When you got a hot, smoking hot wife with a really suspect-looking dude, it's like, I've seen this. It's called King of Queens. Or it's called Everybody Loves Raymond or various other shows. Right? It's like, there's no way in hell that they would have that dude, that fat schlub would have scored this chick. And yet, here we are.
Yeah, can we get the sitcom where the guy is like looks like, you know, I don't know who chicks think what guys are hot now, and then just have the other chick be like Selma Hayek or Sofia Vergara.
Well,
because you know Modern Family had her on it, but she was married to fucking Al Bundy. So
a lot of the stuff that these buffed up guys and stuff that think that are attractive to women are actually stuff that are more attractive to other men. You know, that like I've heard lots of women say, like, basically, like, seeing a super buff, like, ripped guy, she's like, I hope he finds his man. You know,
if I put the effort into get shredded, I'd be showing it off. Like, I'm not gonna lie.
No, but I mean like the bodybuilder type of shred. There's construction worker shredded, you know, that's gonna turn the suburban housewife to jelly, and then there's like
jelly.
oiled up bodybuilder. Look,
hot stuff and, coming through.
Yeah, and like I'm sure well, and there, okay. there's Here's... going to be a percentage of women who are like that is the ideal male for me, but it's probably going to be a higher percentage of men that are just like that's the ideal body for me.
Well, here's the thing. So two points to that, Chris. Okay, first off. Yes, a lot of women say, ew, I don't like bodybuilder guys. No, instead they want guys with a swimmer's body, which takes just as much work to create, if not more.
If right? not more,
They
yes.
want the guys that are yeah. that are super lean, but super yes. muscular, that look like they should be on the cover of a romance romance novel.
I know how
right?
to swim. Does that mean I have a swimmer's body?
Clearly it does.
Well, I mean, the obvious joke that one of you needs to come back with is, yeah, well, that's easy. Shit floats.
Whoa.
Well, I was gonna say, you know, whales have swimmers' bodies also. That's the problem.
Ooh.
But the thing is, it goes both ways, right? Because what do all women want to look like? They want to be tall, thin, and willowy. 90% of dudes don't like that. Dudes like chicks with curves on them that got something you can grab onto and hold, right? But
listen,
the tall,
if you can't project chicks, Lawrence of Arabia in 70mm on that ass, I ain't interested.
Exactly. It's like what's his name? Sir Isaac Newton said it, right? Sir Isaac Newton famously said, "I like 'em thick as fuck." And they said, "You can't say that." And he said, "Okay, then the greater the mass, the greater the force of attraction."
Oh.
Right? So that was
damn straight.
Because he was just keeping it gangster.
But you look at the right? So it's like we're like both sexes are full of shit. Is all I'm getting at here.
Oh yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. The human race is generally just full to the top.
The human
of
race
shit.
Is just well, yeah. It's just shit.
Yeah.
I think that's the surest sign that intelligent life from outer space has never tried to directly contact us. They're like, this is fuck these guys.
Yeah. No, they've done is I'm sure put cameras in selected places and are editing it into a, you know, into a TV show that, you know,
space reality television.
Yeah, yeah, just, you know, trash TV, you know.
That's us. We are trash
yeah.
TV.
We are, yeah.
We've manifested it. Beavis and Butthead started calling it out early, and now we've come to it.
Yeah. They were the avatars.
But if they start viewing it as historical documents, they'll get the wrong idea if they're watching it. Well, I guess that's a Galaxy Quest reference.
Wait. Snooki was not one of the most important people in human history.
But you know the funny part. Not to get us off topic, but Galaxy Quest. Remember they made that to be a comedy, and now it's like, huh? That's kind of like right. Reality. Yeah. It's like all actually right.
Here's a hot take for you because I was watching Three Amigos over the weekend. Huh? We're having a fiesta party.
Three Amigos. What a good
Galaxy
movie.
Quest is just a so Galaxy Quest is just a sci-fi version of Three Amigos.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, funny you mentioned Three Amigos. I literally the other day it came up. It was someone cut Tombstone and the Three Amigos, the gunfights together, and they actually fit really fucking well, like way more than they should. And I was like,
I'm gonna have to watch that.
I was like, huh? It just popped up as like on like Facebook or Instagram as a reel, right? It's just like it. Someone took Tombstone, the gunfight, the OK Corral part of it, right? And when the Three Amigos, and it cuts it all together, and I'm like, huh? That really fucking fits. I was like, I mean, it's no Dark Side of the Moon,
Dark Side of the Moon and Wizard of Oz, yeah.
Wizard of Oz.
You know what's funny is that just Haley heard that. She goes, Dad, did you ever hear that, like, there's an album that matches up with Wizard of Oz? And I'm like, girl, like, life existed before you were born. Like, girl, please. And she's like, I don't know. I just heard it today, Dad. I'm like, I'm sure you did. I'm sure some fucking...
I just heard it today.
Like, I love how she thinks
some fucking douchebag who thinks Nirvana's a t-shirt company.
Well, they don't understand the status of Dark Side. I mean, like, even in the 80s when I was in high school and stuff, and like I think Dark Side of the Moon came out in like 73 or 74 or something like that, but ever since it came out in 73 or 74 into the 80s and almost into the 90s, that album was in the top 100. It was like just selling constantly. Yeah. It was like the most iconic album, maybe except for like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band or something, you know, like, you know, ones where they would be like, it's the 25th anniversary of this album coming out. But like I think the 20th anniversary of Dark Side of the Moon, it was still in the top 100.
All right. Are you ready for the actual numbers, Chris? Because I got it.
Yes.
Dark Side of the Moon has sold over 50 million copies worldwide, making it the third or fourth best-selling album ever.
We were just talking about this because... Go ahead, Jacob. Simon and I were literally just talking about
Thriller is still going to be up there.
741.
Eagles' Greatest Hits is going to be up there.
Okay, hang on. 741 consecutive weeks on the U.S. top 200 from 73 to 88.
200, okay.
No, but I'm saying to expand it to the 200, right? Because it's not even insane, but it's 741 consecutive weeks. That's insane. Like, that's the...
Yeah.
And it had...
I mean, I remember the
759 weeks on the top 100.
It was so iconic that, like, by the 80s, like, my friends and I went over to our drug dealer's house, and we were sitting around in his shitty apartment, and he goes, blah, 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 it's just like listening to Dark Side of the Moon. And we go, we never listened to Dark Side of the Moon. He goes, what? Hang on. Pulls all the shades down, starts passing bongs around, and he's just like, okay, we're lit, and, like, turns the lights down, and we listen to Dark Side of the Moon on his tape deck. You know, he's turning the volume up, and by the time we get to like the clocks, all, you know, the alarms going off, we're just like, whoa, dude. And like that scene played out like millions and millions and millions of times for decades. You know, it's just unbelievable.
So you guys know that one of my favorite things, thanks to Dean Koontz, is synchronicity. Okay?
All right.
And, you know, synchronicity is when two things are
the idea or or the album.
No, that the idea, the concept of synchronicity. The concept of synchronicity, okay? The idea that two things can happen coincidentally and they have no connection whatsoever, right? So earlier this week, I was at the used bookstore. I was at one of the two used bookstores in Greenville. I was at 2nd and Charles. And I had to, I was selling some stuff. And when I dropped, when I dropped my stuff off to sell, I just went over and I looked at the PS1, the PlayStation 1 games, because I have Jay's old PS1, and it's hooked up upstairs. I have zero PS1 games, right?
So I
know the drive works because I can play CDs on it, but I don't know anyone with a PS1 anymore. So it's like, let me find a game that's not, because I have plenty of sports games for other systems. Like, let me find an actual like PlayStation game, right? So as I'm looking around, I happen to find sitting on top of the stack of PlayStation games a broken jewel case that has Halloween Master of the Rings, right? And it's got no price on it. It's a discard. Somebody just tossed it. So I grab that. And I'm like, you know what? This is half the jewel case. I wonder if the actual album is over in the CDs. Okay? So I walk over to the CDs. And I'm looking around for it. And the CDs are all in disarray. But there's no Halloween, right? But I do find on CD for $4 Dark Side of the Moon. And I'm like, yeah, I'll fucking buy this for $4. Absolutely. I love Dark Side of the Moon. My dad used to play that. Used to listen to that in college all the time. So I get it, right? And I get out to the car, and I throw Halloween in, and I drive back to work, right? So, because I did this on my lunch break. So I listen to Halloween on my lunch break, and or listen to Halloween driving back from my lunch break. After work, I go back because I didn't have time. I had a meeting. So I go back after work. I pick up my trade-in value, right? And I go out to the car and I go to leave. And I was like, well, I listened to a good portion of Halloween. Let me put on Dark Side of the Moon. Well, I take it out of the case and it is not Dark Side of the Moon. It is like beach reggae, right? I'm like, it's been a hot minute, but I know this is wrong. So I had to go back and say, hey, you know, try to convince the guy that, no, I didn't just swipe the CD out of this. You really did sell me Dark Side of the Moon, except it's actually like a beach reggae album. And to their credit, they were like, oh, yeah, somebody must have swapped it. No problem. They refunded me my trade credit, and I went along my merry way. But it's like I almost had both Halloween and Dark Side of the Moon for $4, which is like, if that's not a good trip to the used bookstore, I don't know what is.
That's pretty good. I got one used bookstore.
Yeah, so now I'm on the lookout for, you know, I can actually find Dark Side of the Moon, so...
I'm sure you can find it for a song pretty much anywhere.
Well, you know, it's funny because you were talking about the best-selling
really
albums.
Anymore, yeah.
Well, I'm sure I can find it on
If you
want
to get it on vinyl, it's
one.
Gonna if you want it on vinyl, it's gonna cost you a pretty penny these days.
I don't, me. I'm not into
vinyl.
Like
$34.
Yeah, well, but I'll get it either on CD or tape. I mean, that's
CD.
Like I got Jay. You were talking about best-selling albums, and of course, Thriller.
Yep.
We discard the Eagles' greatest hits, number two is Back in Black by AC/DC, and we have a really really cool record store here in Greenville. If you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, check out Pharmacy Records. They are a fantastic little independent record store. They have a huge selection of used CDs and tapes, and I picked up Back in Black on tape from them. It's like this is just cool. This is just vintage cool shit, right? And you know, got to sit down with my little tape deck and paint Warhammer models while listening to Back in Black on tape. It's like, man, it's living the dream, baby. It's old school all the way. Yeah. Not like these Gen Z assholes who can't tell the girl they like her and instead wish her into a life of living hell and then are too cowardly to do anything about
I mean, granted, that guy, I mean, we had guys like that in my high school too, you know. I mean, every nerd has a little bit of that guy. It has some amount of that guy in it, but not to. I mean, this guy was just like, I mean, not a second went by that his character just, everything was just him going
just
like,
sucks.
Well, yeah. I don't know. What do you do? And like,
yep.
Yeah. And you know, the weird thing, I'm still trying to figure out the whole cat thing with him. Because, you know, I was like, okay, we're going to try to build some sort of, you know, sympathy for who can't doesn't have sympathy for someone who loses their cat. But like, I'm looking.
But again, it's the negligence thing. Like you said, like he's
right.
got his grandmother's house that he inherited. He's on a shitload of fucking prescription meds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, he's not actually taking care of himself emotionally, physically, mentally.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, he's incapable of dealing with anything. And also a stubborn refusal to take any responsibility for anything.
I mean, when he calls the customer service line and the representative says, kind of sounds like you got a moral obligation to be with her. Like, yeah. I was just like, well, yeah, dude, that's kind of the way you worded that wish. Yeah. You kind of do, dickhead.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And you can see him, you know, he has a little plausible deniability at the beginning of it, but not for very long. And, you know, I just love how they make it just crystal clear. He knows what he's doing. And he'd rather just sit there in horror of what the effects of what he's doing other than, you know, instead of trying to make it right or address it or anything. I mean, make it right, you'd jump in front of a train, you know, basically that's how you were going to make this right, like early on. But like, yeah, just not even to the point of addressing it as that whole line of what, you know, that Luke brought up in the beginning where he's just like, but, you know, is being with me so bad, you know?
Yeah.
And, which is,
if it wasn't before, it certainly is now.
Yeah. And it's so horrifying, but it's like, I've legitimately known people who probably would have, you know, would have said that. That's like,
he says that when she's asleep. And then like, when Nikki can finally talk, cause she's like, she's asleep. Don't wake her. Kill me. Just kill me. And all she's begging him to kill me. He's like, and he goes to say something. She goes, don't say anything. Shh. Don't wake her up. Like, the whole point is she's able to somehow sneak through because the other one's because Christ, freaky Nick, he's asleep kind of thing, right? And it's like, and he literally says, it's that bad to be with me. It's like, fuck! Like, what? Like, fuck, dude! I mean, like, that just shows levels of, you know, I don't want to say it's necessarily narcissism, but, like, I don't know. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it's got to be, right? Like, I mean, what else could this be? Like, I don't know, man. It's just...
Just a lack of... I guess sociopathy, maybe, you know, having a complete lack of empathy,
yeah.
You know, being unable to like have any kind of empathy at all, you know, but he knew and he knew what he was doing was wrong. And it was obvious. And like, and
yeah,
not only did he know everybody around, you know, from the very beginning, they're like, hey, we're kind of talking about how maybe you're taking advantage of her because she might be having a mental illness thing. And,
right.
You know, there's no scene in this movie.
No, he's the classic main character syndrome. I'm the victim here.
Yes. Yeah. And.
But the thing is that, but, you know, Chris, like you said, from minute one, through minute 97 or whatever it is, right? You can't stand him because
he's the monster.
Well, whatever
it
is, 148, whatever it is. So he spends the entire fucking first act of the movie crying like a little bitch about how much he loves Nikki and how he can't. If only he could get a minute alone with her. He's like, why do you got to come out? You know, why can't you guys give me any time? And why can't you do all this? And he fucking gets her alone, and she asks him point blank, do you have feelings for me? And he fucks it up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, oh, I like you as a friend. It's like, you fucking asshole. Literally my note.
Yeah.
Right here, black is white. Christ, what an asshole. It's right there. Okay, that's all. And that's before he makes the wish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? That's right. Before he even makes the wish. It's like, Christ, what an asshole. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like he was a half decent guy that just got the words wrong,
right.
Or
yeah.
Just was lacking yeah. self-confidence. Yeah. He's just fucking wastoid. Yeah.
So, the other thing too, I don't know if you guys noticed this, throughout the entire movie, Sarah is always on his left and Nikki is always on his right. And so at the party, he says, kiss the person to your left. And it's Sarah, right? And that's when Nikki fucking drags her out and she puts herself on the left. But every scene, she's on his right. I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but I kind of noticed that on the second watch. And I was like, huh, is she always on his right? And it's like literally like over and over and over, even in the car, like she's when she smashes her face into the brick kind of thing. Like she's on the left and Nikki kills her or
and he's,
fucks her up. Right?
He's front and center in almost every shot too that he's in.
But that's what I'm saying. It's always her. Shot. It's so funny because it's like kiss the person to your left and she has to be that person. Right. Like, but that's the thing is she had to move away from where she was. And she's always on his right. Even when they're sitting on the couch and he has to switch seats, she's on his right. So, is she on the left? She might be on his left at that point. But the whole thing, it's over and over and over again. Like, it's always her on his right side. And I don't know if that was meant to be or just the way it's filmed or whatever, but it just seemed weird. The other thing is the brick scene, when she smashes her face into the steering wheel, that was cut. There's actually more of that. And Curry Barker made.
Yeah, well, he said that they had to go cut by cut so that they could see what they could cut so they could not get an NC-17, basically.
Yes, and the thing is,
pretty damn effective,
right? But there's supposedly a longer cut of that, and then what you hear is they had her, the girl who plays Sarah, come in and do gurgling noises with like water or whatever in her mouth because she's not supposed to be dead at the end of the scene. I mean, she's pretty fucking dead, but the whole point is like she's still alive. And she's choking on her own blood. And Bear does nothing to save her because he's a fucking asshole. Now, let's also keep in mind here, right? Like, there's no way in the world, in this day and age, that no camera caught Nikki assaulting her, like, with the brick, and them carrying her body out the back, like, Nikki dragging it back to the house. She scalps her. She puts her clothes on. She draws her tattoos on her. Like, the fucking end of this movie just like, okay, we've had it. Let's just ramp this up. Right?
They're not getting, they're not covering up that crime end of this movie.
No.
It's
for a majorly distributed motion picture, R-rated one, that is a fucking sackcloth black ending.
Yeah.
Like, it is. I enjoyed the movie the whole time. It's
the monster sort of wins. The monster sort of wins it because he dies finally fulfilled because of her wish, and she's left probably going to prison, you know, with all her fingerprints on, you know, and probably, you know, the neighbor's front door, you know, front door doorbell cam.
It doesn't matter who walks into that house first. There's one person alive covered in blood and three corpses.
Yes, so, who's been acting like a crazy person in front of everybody she knows
you're fucked.
For the whole time. Yep. And you know, they maybe think that Bear might be guilty of something, but he's dead. He's gone. So she's going to prison or she's going into a mental home.
Or she's getting sectioned.
Yeah, after this, you know, basically her life has ruined her. Like, you know, her whole face is just distorted. It's just like it's evil.
I was surprised. I was, and I'm. And I mean, I think I mentioned it in the chat. I was like, I'm honestly surprised that the group of Gen Z are like actually that into a movie that is this fucking dark. Like it, because that's not usually what they go for.
I'll put it this way. I saw the quote that made me go, I'm gonna watch Backrooms and Obsession two nights in a row to get the full, said that the Backrooms and Obsession are two movies about a guy who will not take responsibility for his actions and ends up putting it all on you know, the female lead in the movie. And I was like, okay, let's check this out. And yep, pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much both movies. But yeah, it's just like, yeah, he leaves her holding the whole bag at the end of this movie. It's just, yeah. It's
yeah. So like we were saying, guys, like, I mean, obviously, you know, we all clearly enjoyed this movie. I have not seen it as of this recording. I have not actually seen Backrooms yet, and I haven't seen the Odyssey, which just dropped, and I have not seen Project Hail Mary. I've meant to watch Project Hail Mary. I know I need to sit down and watch that. I just can't.
It's a longer one. I need more
time. It's like 2.5.
I was going to watch it the other night, and it was like 2:36 or something like that. And it's like,
but I'm saying, but it's a sit down and watch. It's not one of those.
Yes,
like, kind of,
that's
thumb,
what I'm saying. Yeah,
you know, kind of thing. You know, kind of thing. So yeah. I mean, so I can't have, like, you know, constant distractions. Have to make everyone's dinner, clean up everyone's shit, do all the stuff I normally, you know, like my life cannot happen while I'm trying to watch this movie. I need to actually sit down and watch this movie and actually pay attention. So.
Yeah, I will say that Project Hail Mary, I threw that on. I didn't move for the 2.5 hours,
and that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for a movie that's actually really engrossing.
For I'm waiting for when I have that time for that experience.
Yeah. So, but like, you know what? So at this point, like I said, I've seen a bunch of movies this year. Like, I mean, not near, obviously only about halfway through the year, so I haven't seen everything. You know, but to me, this is probably the best movie of the year so far that I've seen. Right. I can say I really enjoyed Primate. You know, I'm trying to think what else. Like, you know, I mean, this is definitely, I enjoyed this more than like Lee Cronin's The Mummy, which I liked. I enjoyed this more than Evil Dead Rise, which I liked. Like, all those things are movies I like. Like, I have my type of movie I enjoy, right? Kind of thing. I'm not sitting here watching a lot of romantic comedies or a lot of historical dramas or whatever.
Oh, don't lie.
I watch a lot of I watch a lot of the Hallmark Christmas movies, but that's
say,
usually because
Lifetime Channel going on.
The Hallmark Christmas movies, Kelly and I watch them all the time because I can literally not pay attention to them and know exactly what's happening. Because when I was going through chemo, when I was narcoleptic, I would fall asleep in the middle of one and wake up in the next one and be totally fine. But the idea is that, like, this is not a movie that I think, if you had said to me January 1, here's all the movies coming out this year, what do you think might be? I wouldn't necessarily have known this was anything more than just some throwaway, you know, whatever.
I saw a trailer for it. I saw a trailer for it months before it came out and was like, yeah, okay. You know,
but I'm saying who knows it would have been
like
good.
Anything special,
right?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, okay, like, you know. I always am excited to have horror movies come out, even if the horror movies that come out may or may not live up to the hype, whatever, that's fine. But, like, you know, coming into the year, I'd heard a lot about certain other movies, and some aren't out yet, obviously, and, you know, they're like, well, this is this, and I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I really hope that this pushes the envelope, or this does this. This is a pleasant surprise. I'm always happy. And again, this will never make our, you know, hidden gem list because everyone knows about it. But this is the kind of movie that, you know, maybe a few years ago, if it doesn't get, you know, a wide release, if this went straight to video, this could have been one of those movies we kind of figured out, like, hey, you watch it and you're like, this is really good, and it catches on. But this didn't have a chance to become a cult movie because it literally was just, it hit the theaters and became an instant, you know, accepted. This is what you want to, you know, kind of thing. I mean, this, think about it. The amount of
it was
the amount
a natural
of things that, yeah, But think of what's open and closed in the time that this has been in the theaters. Like, there has been some major releases that are opening and closing, quote unquote. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, Supergirl and the Mandalorian came and went.
Yeah.
Came and went down the toilet, you know, while these two movies. These two movies, the Backrooms and Obsession, are the real Barbenheimer. Barbenheimer was a, like, media, like, all right, we'll get you going to see these big budget movies on the same weekend and get people into going to the theaters. And that sort of, that worked, but it was a publicity thing. This worked just on its own, just by the just fact that the movies came out at the same time and everybody loved them and were going to them repeatedly. So I love that these two, like, both of them are, well, you know, I mean, the Backrooms is obviously more of a weirdo film, but they're both solid, odd, original films and are just, you know, trashing everything else. I love it. I love it so much. it can only... I mean, yes, Hollywood will find a way to get the wrong message from it and fuck it up, but at the same time, there's going to be a lot of probably, you know, there's... I don't want to make predictions, but I'll just say there's a better chance of good things coming from the success of these movies than, say, the success of Oppenheimer and Barbie. You know, the Barbie movie.
Yeah. So the only thing I wanted to throw out there, and I have not seen this anywhere else, but I noticed this. When they come back to the apartment after, now that, you know, Nikki has now skinned, is wearing all her clothes, including, I'm pretty sure, her undergarments, because I think she's naked. I think you see all the cash and prizes down there on her.
That's the only...
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
On the TV behind him, it appears to be a video of Bear sleeping.
Yes.
Yes.
And I have not heard anyone even talk about that idea of it, you know, kind of thing. But it's clearly him, you know, kind of thing. But it's like, but I go, at that point, let's be honest, at the end of the movie, this thing is fucking just like coming at you, you know, kind of thing. Like, I mean,
she's got to have something on the TV when he's off working and she's just standing by the front door waiting for him to come home.
Well, what I'm saying is, but it's like when you first watch the movie, you definitely aren't catching like that she's completely stripped naked. That, like, I mean, you know she's wearing it, but, like, when they pan over to Sarah, like, I mean, I know it's whatever, but it's like, is she actually naked? Like, I mean, she's got her stockings on, but, like, everything else is gone. Like, she's took everything off her. And I'm like, holy fuck. Okay. Like, those are the kind of things that you pick up on your second and third viewing. I'm going to say this, and it just, there are movies that are really good movies that you watch once and you don't necessarily want to watch again. Everyone kind of understand what I'm saying. Like, that was really well made. Yeah. This is a really good film, whatever. You have to kind of decide to sit down and watch it. And I'm not saying this is a movie you're going to kind of throw on, whatever. But, like, I've seen this three times. And I got to watch it with Kelly eventually, too. The idea is, like, every time I'm watching this, I'm looking now deeper into scenes to find stuff. Because it's just like, let me find those little things that maybe Curry put in there because he thinks about those things. I don't know. I mean, and maybe there'll be a time when I eventually have seen enough times where I know, like, you know, I see all the anomalies, to steal a term from Exit 8. It's a newer movie that just came out.
Just the nuances of Nikki's performance, you know, Nikki's character as she's going berserk is
now
rewatchable, and that's a big thing about this movie. Is I guess this movie has basically been cut up into chunks, and is you know, there's just multiple parts of this movie that are like viral videos on.
Yep.
You know, so people are obsessively watching little, and it makes you feel all different kinds of ways intensely. And
I told a couple of buddies, I said, if you have anxiety of, like, any stripe
of any kind, it's anxiety from the beginning to the end. It's squirmy. It's cringy. You know, and that's another Gen Z thing, is they're real masters and connoisseurs of cringe. And so this is cringy from, I mean, the very first scene where he's in the
diner,
in the talking booth, to the waitress. In the diner, yeah. Giving his pitch, you know, practice pitch, and you know, the poor waitress is like reacting like, oh yeah, okay. From that moment, it's just, I was like, I know I'm going to be on like uncomfortable pins and needles from, you know, I'm going to be in Larry David land for this whole movie.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
And people are just going to want to watch videos of this to analyze their own feelings of it. And also it's feelings about their dating life now. You know, we can look at it from a distance. We're all old, you know, and you guys are all married, and you know, it's just like, okay, we don't have to, you know, we're not worried about the dating world, but it's like, and we can look at it from a distance. But these Zoomers, they're living it. This is what they want. If they want to have a relationship or want to have sex or anything like that, that's what they got. This is what they got to contend with. This exact movie.
So I do want to mention the waitress at the diner, because she's like the most well-adjusted character in this film.
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
She sits there. She listens to what he's got to say. Like, she's like, you can imagine that Ian and was like, hey, can you come? Just listen to what my friend has to say, because he's trying to talk to a girl that he likes, and he wants to run it by somebody, right? And she does it, you know. She's not nasty or mean about it. And what does she say? Hey, maybe get her something nice. Yeah. You know,
like flowers or gives, candy. Like,
reasonable advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, something that, like, you know, as a gift to like break the ice so you can talk about it. It's like, why don't you listen to her? She's got her shit together more than you do.
She's a good waitress.
Isn't that right,
Anne?
She's
developed her waitress
skills. Waitress has got her shit together in that movie.
Yes.
Yeah, see, my daughter just agreed with me.
Shrewd.
Yeah. So, if you want to see this movie, you would have to you'd be hard-pressed not to find it. Can we go with that? Is that probably the nicest way to say this? Like, it's fucking everywhere. Go watch it. If you listen to this whole podcast, you haven't seen this movie, what the fuck? But like, seriously, go watch it. And if you've seen it already, it's probably worth a second watch, you know, kind of thing. Especially if you have Peacock, because it's now streaming on Peacock and stuff like that. It was funny because my 4K showed up the other day, and Haley's like, oh, cool. Like, I'm like, you can stream it on Peacock too, Haley. She's like, oh, okay. Like, and she was going to watch it in the car on the way up to Albany, because it's a two-hour drive, really an hour and like 40, whatever minute movie. But she decided to put on Modern Family instead, because she goes, I'm going to take a nap. So she put on something that she could, like, you know, kind of fall asleep to, whatever.
Fall asleep to.
But yeah, but like, I'm not kidding. Every girl, like, so we were at field hockey practice the other day, and there's got to be 30 girls at field hockey practice. This is CRC. And they're all talking about Obsession. And Haley goes, oh, you guys saw Obsession? And they go, no. They hadn't even seen it. And they all are talking about it. Haley goes, I went and saw it Sunday. This is weeks and weeks and weeks ago, right? And like, this is like, we took her to a Sunday. They're like, you saw it? She goes, yeah, my dad took me Sunday morning when everyone's still, as she goes, as my dad says, everyone's in church or still drunk. And, you know, the girls kind of like look at her. And I'm like, it's true. And she's like, yeah, we saw it. They go, oh, we want to go see it. She goes, and I guess it was showing like a lot of a lot of places have their, you know, their Tuesday, you know, $7, $5, whatever. They're all going to go. But Tuesday night we have practice. So they're all figuring out what's the latest, what's the show that'll happen after we get out of practice. Can we get back to where, because you don't practice where we live. Can we get to somewhere and go see it? Some of the girls were literally like, well, it's playing in New Paltz, across the street from where we are, do we want to go after practice? Like, that's what they were talking about. I'm like, that's so crazy to me that this generation, to go to a movies, to go to the movies, like, that's not a thing they do. But they're doing it for this. So, anyway.
And a horror movie to boot.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Victory. Victory.
Finally. Yay. Everything keeps coming up. Milhouse.
You know, kind of thing. Well, my mom says I'm cool.
Oh.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I wish Chris Honeywell loved me more than anyone in the fucking world. Fucking world. Fucking world. Fucking world. Fucking world.